Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A bad week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They did win a couple games, but they go 2-5 overall. Six of those games were at home, and three of them losses to the Oakland Athletics, who came into the series with just 14 wins and 50 losses, and they get swept in one of the more humbling series of the of recent memory for the Milwaukee Brewers. We got to talk all about it. After we talk to Todd, I got a couple interviews. Joey Weimer, obviously the Brewers center fielder who's had a very nice week, did have a chance to catch up with him on Sunday. Had a nice chat with him. And after that, a couple minutes with Lucas Erceg. He pitched for the Oakland Athletics this weekend. Had two multi-inning relief appearances, both of them scoreless. He was with the Brewers. He was drafted in 2016. He's been with the franchise since earlier this year, since May, when he was traded to Oakland right into a big league spot for cash considerations, and now of course he comes back to the team and burns his old team, but he's very grateful for a chance to be in the big leagues, and it was really cool talking to him. He's a good story. He's overcome alcoholism. He's overcome position change. He was a position player, drafted, played several years, and then 2021 started as a pitcher, and has a live arm, and it enabled him to get to the big leagues. And he made his debut earlier this season in Houston, and had a chance to pitch in the stadium where he obviously hoped to be a big leaguer someday, and it came true, just in a little bit of a different way. So that follows my conversation with Todd. And Todd, obviously, you know, plenty of caveats here. Weird things happen to every team, every baseball season. There frequently are situations where a worst team or the worst team beats a team that's very good. This happens at the end of the year when the playoff chase is going on too. These things happen, and the A's, I think, were playing very well. You got to give them credit. They've won five straight games. However, this is a really, really rough one for a team that has had symptoms of not being great on offense this year. I think that was a really rough showing for the offense over the weekend against Oakland. And I mean, I don't know how much you want to go. We can go in the nitty gritty of this particular series, other than to say that team was historically bad, on pace to being historically bad, and you can't get swept by that team. Even though I realize weird things happen, so I guess as you come out of it, what is your Zen feeling like? Is this symptomatic of just what this Brewers team is? Is it a horrible omen? Is it just random? Like what can you possibly say about this Oakland Athletics series?
I think you know me well enough to know over the years of doing this that I tend not to get too upset or too emotional one way or the other. That being said, there's really no way you can explain away this sweep is nothing other than like just terrible as far as, you know, the Brewers are concerned, a fan perception of the team at this point, just everything. Everything went wrong in this series. All the bugaboos showed their ugly faces. And it was just a bad, bad performance across the board. Offense, which had been struggling coming in, was terrible. Starting pitching was decent, I would say. Defense was okay. The bullpen showed its cracks as well. Just nothing good came of it. And yes, you can explain away every good team has a bad series here and there. Even bad teams are still major league teams with talent, et cetera, but in my opinion, good teams just don't do this. You don't get swept at home by not just a bad team, not just a last place team, but as you said, historically bad team. There's just no way to sugarcoat it. It was a horrible performance. I think the off day on Monday is going to be very much needed. It's going to be interesting to see heading into Tuesday when the Brewers open up that two-game series in Minnesota, if there are going to be any more lasting lineup changes with Pat Murphy being the interim manager on Sunday. I don't know how much input he had, if any, from Craig Counsell, but the lineup was quite a bit different, and some different guys in different spots and so forth. I wonder if there will be more changes or more willingness to make changes moving ahead. But there's no question that the Brewers need to pick it up, need to figure out what's going on with this offense, need the bullpen to get a little bit more back on track, and just kind of try to shake this malaise, I guess is the best word to put it, that's been kind of descended upon this team since that loss to the Orioles on Thursday at home, the game where they led and then gave up the lead late. It's been very ugly since then.
The Athletics came into this series with an ERA well over six. It was by far the worst pitching ERA in baseball. And yet the Brewers score only two runs in the first game. They score in one inning and one inning only. They do not have a hit after the second inning. The second game goes to extras in a 1-1 tie. An eighth inning home run from William Contreras saves the shutout, but then the Brewers lose in extras. And then they do bust out a little bit with three runs in the ninth, but by then the damage had kind of been done. The Brewers were playing from way behind at that point. Some, like you mentioned, Pat Murphy, some interesting like bullpen decisions to have Strzelecki coming out for another inning, and with these days off, they have 2 days off in the next four ahead. So that was an interesting finish as well. But overall, this offense is just inconsistent at this point, I think, is kind. I mean, it hasn't been productive enough. And I think if you're the biggest concern, I guess I would have is a lot of their struggles, the sort of response to that is, well, just wait till they're healthy. They need to get a lot of people healthy. And that's true still to a degree, but all the bigger health issues are on the pitching side. The position players are all here, with the exception of Jesse Winker, who was in a horrendous slump to start the year. And I mean, if you get him back, great, but I don't know what you're going to be counting on from Jesse Winker. Like, everybody that should be, that needs to be available is available. And they're still going with guys who either aren't productive or don't have a track record of being productive. You know, right now, Rowdy Tellez has one extra base hit since May 23rd. It was a triple, oddly enough. You know, Andrew Monasterio, who was a nice story last week, kind of came back to earth quite a bit, 2 for 16. Willy Adames has not been himself. You know, Christian Yelich homered on Sunday, but hadn't homered since mid-May after he had two homers in three games. I mean, it's all stuff we've talked about. But they just don't have it on offense. And I don't know if there is a... I don't know if there's a solution. You know, like, maybe it's getting Sal Frelick here. Like, you can't put it all at the feet of a guy who's never played in the big leagues before. Honestly, it's kind of like they need to go back in time and add some more bats in the offseason. But obviously, that's water under the bridge. So, like, is there anything they can do? I feel like I've asked that question before, but how does this offense get to a point where it is, number one, consistent enough to get to the playoffs, and number two, strong enough to do damage when it gets there? I mean, there's that trade deadline, of course, but I just don't know what they do, Todd. I don't know what the solution is for the offense.
Craig Counsell said it time and time again. It's the guys that are there. There aren't any moves to be made necessarily at this particular point in time. It's incumbent on those guys who are in the lineup every day to start producing. It's as simple as that. And I asked Craig Counsell after the loss Saturday, you know, what are you seeing from these guys in the box? What are you seeing? Are the players being too aggressive? Are they being under, you know, they're not being aggressive enough? And he simply said they're just not taking advantage of the opportunities that are presented. When a ball is out over the plate, you have to be able to be ready to do damage. And they're just simply not doing that at this point. And, you know, you mix in the high strikeout rate. Guys aren't walking as much as they had been earlier in the season. The situational offense is kind of been non-existent since the first month. I think back to those conversations we had after the first month and saying how refreshing it was to watch an offense finally produce, you know, guys getting on base, moving the runners up, hitting behind guys, bunting once in a while, without needing to rely on that home run ball all the time to score. And really, since the Garrett Mitchell injury, you know, Bryce Terang, Joey Weimer came back down to earth a bit. Terang is now in Nashville. Joey Weimer's shown some flashes, but overall, it's kind of just gone right back to that home run or bust mentality, and it's clearly not working. So, it's going to behoove them to try to get something together, whether that's shifting lineups around, trying different guys, maybe sitting a guy down for a few days. I don't know. I don't know. I don't get paid the big bucks to make those decisions, but it's clear that what they're doing right now is not working.
Yeah, and they've messed around with the lineups. They've tried that aspect of it, but it's exactly right. And what you talk about, pitches over the plate. I mean, Christian Yelich for the last couple of years, that's been one of the biggest issues, is that he doesn't hit mistakes the way he used to. And I think we're seeing that team wide at this point. They do not have a fearsome hitter in the lineup, and someone's just going to have to emerge, or it's curtains. I think that's pretty easy to say at this point. All right, so you mentioned Joey Weimer. If we're looking at bright spots, he had a really good week. He didn't finish that strong. He struggled in the A series like a lot of the bats did, but for a while there, he had a 9-game hitting streak and then an 11-game on base streak. Like, he had a really exciting week also defensively. I mean, especially defensively, made a great, great catch on Wednesday night, and then ultimately got the walk-off single into the corner, which was a great moment for him. He also made two outfield assists on Saturday in the same inning, which was kind of an unusual thing. He the first Brewers player since Lorenzo Cain in 2018 to even have two in the same game, and the first player in franchise history to have two in the same inning. So that was fun. He continues to be a bright spot on defense. And, Todd, I talked to him a little bit on Sunday, and It really, I feel like we've said it before, but it really does bear repeating. This is not a guy who played center field in the minors. He has some experience there and obviously the tools to do it, but he didn't play center field until the Brewers just needed him to, because Garrett Mitchell got hurt. Sal Frelick got hurt on the exact same night, and they didn't have Tyrone Taylor wasn't ever really kind of able to get off the Schneid. They needed it. It was out of necessity, and he's an everyday player at center field. I think offensively it's a work in progress. I think it's coming around a little bit, but, I mean, he really, right now, is kind of, outside of maybe Julio Teheran, the biggest success story of the season. Like, somebody that you just probably could not have counted on to do this. And he's probably their most exciting player, wouldn't you say, Todd?
I think it's been fascinating to watch him develop as the season has gone on. This is a guy that wasn't on the opening day roster, comes up the day after in Chicago, was thrown into the lineup, and he's not been out since, and played a strong right field, played a strong center field. He's starting to show more consistency at the plate. He's able to, when he's on base, change the game with his speed. We saw it the other day. I mean, the guy just, he beats out ground balls on occasion, makes fielders really have to rush to get the ball over to first base. He's just a fun guy to watch play. And I think the offense will continue to be a work in progress, assuming he stays healthy. He'll be in the lineup most of the rest of the regular season. You figure, who knows, finishes with 15 plus homers, drives in, 50 some runs, whatever he does to me offensively is a bonus. It's the defense has just been so good. And I asked Craig Counsell on Saturday, asked Christian Yelich on Saturday too, the way he's playing right now, still early, but to me, it would not be surprising in the least, without looking at the rest of the league and, who else is doing what in center, but it would not be surprising to me in the least to see him at least be a finalist for the Gold Glove Award in center, which would just be insane. But he's been that good. Leads the Brewers in outs above average. He's a third best outfielder in the major leagues, outs above average. He's getting to everything. He's got a tremendous arm, way above average for center fielders, I would say. Does not look like a rookie out there in the least. And it's just been fun to watch. So, again, in a season where there's been so many negatives and so much that people can point to and say, this has gone wrong, that's gone wrong, injuries, et cetera. He's really been fun to watch play and develop, and I think he's only going to get better, and a fun guy to talk to as well. He's not going to fill your notebook up as a reporter, but what he says carries weight and oftentimes very blunt and very funny, which there's definitely value in that too.
You will hear from Joey Weimer at the end of this podcast. I had a conversation with him on Sunday, like I said, so you will hear that in its entirety. I would say another bright spot is a couple of the pitchers. It's kind of an interesting dichotomy here. Starting pitching has been, I would say, at this point, we have to say, just way better than could be expected if you knew that Eric Lauer, Wade Miley, and Brandon Woodruff would all be out at this point of the year. Colin Ray continues to do what he's doing. Very, you know, workmanlike. It isn't always perfect because he's just not, you know, he's not that top flight talent, but he is doing everything that is being asked of him. Corbin Burnes had his best outing of the year, or at least arguably his best outing of the year. He absolutely looked all the way back in his start in the middle of the week. Very refreshing to see the Brewers got at least one laugher game against the Orioles on Wednesday night. And Julio Teheran, man, I mean, they got this guy from AAA. He was not doing well at AAA. Like, there was no indication that Julio Teheran was going to be what he has turned into for the Milwaukee Brewers through four starts. He has been absolutely sensational. He has not won. He's won only one of the four starts because he's gotten absolutely no runs from the offense. Two of those games were shutouts. And then on Saturday, it's a game where they scored one run in the eighth inning and lost an extra. So it is obviously not at his feet. The Brewers right now seem to have an absolute revelation in what they've been able to do with their starting pitching, especially with Teheran. You know, but then of course Freddy Peralta's hiccups here and there, giving up home runs left and right, and it's short-circuiting what could be otherwise really good starts. So I guess that's still a big concern. But like I gotta say, Todd, I think starting pitching wise, they're okay. They're only gonna get healthier in the starting pitching starting rotation. I feel like the Brewers have done really well this year on that front.
Yeah, I would agree and say that that's probably the least of their concerns right now. You know, as you mentioned, Julio Teheran has been just outstanding. I don't think anybody could have ever expected in their wildest dreams for him to pitch the way he has to this point. Colin Ray, I would say, has been better Jason Alexander this year, if that makes sense. Just a reliable guy that will go out and take the ball every 5 days. Definitely more strikeout stuff. I would say he's been better overall, but just in terms of the consistency of, you know, pretty much knowing what you're going to get outing to outing, five innings, competent guy out there. It's really all you can ask for in that situation. You know, seeing Corbin Burnes lock back in his last start, definitely a great sign. You know, you want to see that continue now over X number of starts to really be able to declare that, yes, he is back and he is that guy again, because they certainly do need it. And then you've got, Wade Miley in the minors. He did make a start here on Sunday. Went five innings. You have to think he's pretty close to getting back. On the flip side of that coin, Eric Lauer had a start and it was simply disastrous. So it makes you wonder what's going on with him. It seems like he's still going to be a ways off from being able to be plugged back in. And, looking even further out, then you've got, Brandon Woodruff, who realistically is probably going to be sometime around the All-Star break before you can talk about plugging him back in. But to this point, just holding serve, treading water, however you want to say it, the guys that they've been running out there have done a pretty darn good job overall. And up until recently here, the bullpen has done a great job as well. So pitching definitely not high on the list of worries for the Brewers.
Yeah, the Brewers can afford to be patient with Eric Lauer, given that if Wade Miley is going to be back very soon. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if he's activated this week. And they'll then have six starting pitchers that they can roll with. So Eric Lauer, figure it out. I'm sure that's what the message will be. And they can again be patient with him. Man, getting Brandon Woodruff back and getting Freddy Peralta up to speed, I really just feel like that puts this team in a position where they can compete. They're a game back in the NL Central. As bad as this A's series was, this division sucks. So like, they're gonna have a chance here, and the players they got, I think they're gonna hover, and even if they're at 500, they're gonna be in the mix. And if they get those guys back, they're better than a 500 team. They're a team that can compete in the postseason. So they just got to figure Freddie out, and they got to get Brandon Woodruff healthy. Those are gonna be huge, and at least in my mind. Another injury situation. Jesse Winker is a guy who has been down for a little while with a neck injury. He now has homered twice in the minor leagues. Once in a game that got rained out halfway, like in the third inning on Saturday, but previous to that as well in his first game, he of course had not homered in the big leagues yet this season. He only had three extra base hits, just really, really rough start. But I guess you get a little bit of hope that maybe he could be, not fixed, but healthier and in a position where he's actually got a swing that can give you some pop and give you some extra base hits. I know that's obviously why they brought him in here. So I don't know though how, like, I'm imagining they're going to be careful with him and just like give him as much minor league experience as he can on the rehab start so that he can feel fully well. You know, they could certainly with Tellez struggling, John Singleton has been, you know, he's hit the ball hard, but I would say it's probably he's not been the difference necessarily. I got to think that they really want to get Winker back, but I don't know. I don't know what the plan would be. Do you imagine that they'll rush him back here, or are they going to take their time? Like, what do you foresee for Jesse Winker at this point?
No, I would expect that they'll take their time with him because he's not a make or break kind of guy right now. I think the focus is going to be on getting him back. Number one, obviously that he feels good, he feels healthy, but number two, getting him back to a good spot at the plate, getting him into a good headspace so that when he comes back, you can plug him back into the lineup and at the very least hope that you can get the Jesse Winker of the first month of the season, who wasn't necessarily showing any power, but still was driving in some runs and providing a little bit of pop from run production from the left-handed side of the plate. So the two homers for Nashville, obviously a good sign, good starting point, but now he just needs to stack at bats, feel good about where he's at. And I would expect that, they'll rely on his input very heavily as well as to, when he feels like he's ready to come back. And then at that point you bring him back. And I would think that John Singleton would be the odd man out at that point in time. You never know. But the story of him returning to the majors is great, but he certainly has not set the world on fire since he's been back. So switch out one left-handed bat for another. And from the Brewers' standpoint, hopefully Jesse Winker gets going again at the plate.
I still think I said this at the beginning of the season when Sal Frelick gets to this big league team. I guessed he would arrive in May and really give this team a jolt. Obviously, he was injured, so that wasn't going to happen. He has started playing in some rehab games in Arizona, and I don't think there's anything real to the Garrett Mitchell being the key cog for this offense. I just don't think necessarily that highly of him as an offensive player. But there is a correlation, if not a causation. When he was there, they were a different team. I feel like Sal Frelick can bring them that something extra that they don't have right now. Right now, there's definitely, I mean, with no offense to Blake Perkins, but they could use another outfielder, another healthy outfielder. So if Frelick is healthy, I wonder if they bring him up right away and put him in that outfield with Weimer and Yelich and see if they can sort of resuscitate this offense a little bit through him. Obviously, some of that depends on what they see in the rehab start. He was not setting the world on fire at AAA this year either before he went down. So it's not like you're getting a surefire offensive fix by any means. But do you think same question as with Winker? Do you think the Sal Frelick timetable is a short one, or is it still a, he could still be down there all year for all we know? Like, what do you think about Frelick?
Just based off of what Craig Counsell told us on Saturday, I would not anticipate some lightning fast call up for him. It sounds like they're wanting him to get a good base under him as well. Again, build the confidence, get the numbers back up there, get stack some at bats, and then see where he's at. The Craig Counsell, the way he put it was, Sal's going to have to get back to that point where he's knocking on the door and making us make a tough decision to bring him up. So that to me says that they're not looking at him as some kind of quick fix or anything like that. He's going to have to prove that he deserves that call up and is going to bring something to the roster. So there definitely is some work ahead for him. It's just timing is everything, and it's really unfortunate and kind of crazy in a way that he got hurt on the same night that Garrett Mitchell got hurt back in April. Would have been a no-brainer that he would have been called up at that point, and who knows where, he would be, where the Brewers would be at this point. Obviously, no guarantees that he would have been tearing it up, but it would have been fun to see what he could have done. Instead, it was Blake Perkins. Sal Frelick undergoes surgery, and finally now he's back. So, best thing he can do, stack some more at bats in Arizona, move on to Nashville, start showing the same kind of swing, the same kind of on base that he did last season, and maybe around the All-Star break, we'll take a look back and see where he's at, and if there's a need, it would not surprise me at all to see him get called up. But for right now, focus needs to be for Sal on just getting back into the swing of things, no pun intended, and putting some numbers up.
Brewers did make a few roster moves earlier in the week. You mentioned Bryce Tarang going down. We'll talk about him a little bit here, coming up in 3-up, 3-down. Mike Brosseau also, who had been really struggling, he winds up back at AAA Nashville. He had some options remaining. So Abraham Toro is still on this team. We thought he might be the first to go down. I think I miscalculated there with Brosseau and Tarang going down this week. Again, like, there's nobody mashing, like, even around the edges, outside of Owen Miller, who's been really solid across the board, and maybe William Contreras with pretty good numbers as a catcher goes. There's just nobody overperforming right now, so it's been a struggle. Let's move into some of the more granular details from the week that was this tough 2-5 week. It's 3-up, 3-down. All right, Todd, I'll get it going, and I'm going to start with Bryce Tarang because I just mentioned him. He did go down. He was in a massive, massive slump. I don't even remember what it was, 1-for-40 or something along those lines. But it is cruel how this game works. He actually had a massive hit on Wednesday night, a game-tying single that enabled the Brewers to force extra innings and that where they ultimately won on Joey Weimer's walk-off. So I believe that was one of two hits he had that night, an extra base hit as well. So Bryce Tarang comes through big time in the clutch, and then gets sent down the next day. A very cruel twist of fate in baseball, but I do think, based on what we saw with Tarang, obviously the defense is major league, no questions asked. He's good. I think I said this on the last podcast. He wasn't otherworldly in recent weeks to the point that it justified keeping somebody who at the plate was really, really fighting it. I think offensively, obviously, it would be good to get some more at-bats at the AAA level and get him back up here. He's going to be back. He'll be back this season for sure, in my mind, barring injury. And so I think this was the right move, and hopefully he gets right and gets back here soon. They can use him. They could use that that middle infield defense, if nothing else.
Yeah, so then he gets sent down, and then what does Willy Adames do in his first at bat? He homers after coming off the IL. Just a great moment for him, and you know, hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire since then, but he's got enough of a track record, and he's done enough that, you know, you have confidence that he is going to produce. He is going to be, you know, a valuable run producer toward the top or in the middle of that lineup moving forward. And it's another experienced bat that lengthens that lineup out and makes you feel a little bit better when you look at it like, okay, this is getting closer to what came out of spring training, what everybody had envisioned for the Brewers this season. And then of course the, you know, not overly spectacular defense, but just really, really steady at shortstop, not to mention what he brings in the clubhouse and the dugout as well. So just to see Willie back and feeling good. And, you know, having seen that replay again and talking to Willie, really fortunate that it was not a more significant injury, and, you know, glad that he's back for his sake.
Yeah, incredible. Obviously, he homered in his first rehab start, doubled, and then that first swing. Really a good sight to behold, but he is fighting it like all the other offensive guys. It has been a struggle overall offensively for him. I'm going to talk about defense again. Two great plays at the plate over the course of the week. The Brewers in the Monday game against Cincinnati were able to throw out Jonathan India at home after some confusion between infielders and outfielders. Ball fell at the feet of Brian Anderson. He's able to get an outfield assist, get the out at home. Brian Anderson, I praised his defense pretty profoundly a couple podcasts ago. It hasn't been the smoothest since then, either at third base or right field, but he was able to pick up the pieces there and make a really nice play. And then the real fun one was on Saturday. Joey Weimer plays a perfect double off the wall, picks it up, heaves it to Adames, throws to the plate to Victor Caratini, and they get a runner, Jonah Bride, coming home. That obviously proved to be a big deal because that game was scoreless for a while and it was 1-0 for a while. I mean, that game went to extra, so that was a big out. Again, that was the second outfield assist Joey Weimer had in that inning. He threw out Ramon Laureano, strangely trying to turn a single into a double, someone who did not know what Joey Weimer's arm was like earlier in the inning. So that was a really, really fun one. I happened to be with friends very close to the action at that point in the seating bowl, and it was a really beautiful thing to see live and in person. So some good outfield defense that has been a theme for the Brewers this year. It's been good outfield defense. We talked about that earlier, and a couple of nice outs at the plate. Unfortunately, both of those games ended up in losses.
Interesting that two assist inning was the first time in franchise history an outfielder had two assists in the same inning, which all the games, all the innings, really what amazed me. I can't believe that there was not at least one other case of that, but that indeed was the case. So a little bit of history for Joey Weimer. Also the first Brewers center fielder to have two assists in a game since 2018, Lorenzo Cain. And I believe he was the fourth or fifth outfielder in the majors this season to have two assists in a game. So again, just underscoring the defensive impact that Joey Weimer has had on the Brewers, all positive.
Yeah, for my third one, Luis Arias is back. He's part of the reason we mentioned Brasso and Teran going down. Willy Adames was one of those roster moves. Luis Arias, the other. He came back a little bit earlier than we thought. I believe he was in that the finale on Monday. And, you know, he's still fighting it, too. We're still in a small sample zone with him. He did have a double off the padding, the yellow padding stripe that basically is just inches away from a home run on Friday night's game. So that was his first hit back. To that point, he'd been 0 for 14. He does not look like he's fully locked in offensively yet. Join the club, take a number. But Luis Arias is back, and that is potentially a big weapon for them in their struggles against left-handed pitchers. That, of course, reared its ugly head again on Sunday when a left-handed pitcher kept the Brewers in check, just as it's been the case all year long. Left-handed pitchers just befuddling this team. They're the worst team in the league against it. So guys like Urias are essential to get him going as somebody who can do that. So him being back, welcome sight, but you know, with everybody else, got to try to get him going offensively, and you know, maybe once he gets fully healthy, fully acclimated, he'll be somebody that can really help them turn the tide.
Do you think a mullet on Luis Urias would help?
Absolutely. Jesus, what kind of question is that? Of course.
Joey Weimer making a fashion statement with his mullet. Quite a great look. I remember interviewing him after his first season in the minors with the Brewers when he had the real long flowing one. You know, talked about how popular it was with fans. He reports the spring training the following spring and had buzzed it off. Very disappointing, but good to see it back now. And then to shave the sides, good visual, good for a laugh. And now his teammates talking about doing the same thing if they make the playoffs, which would indeed be incredible, seeing a guy like Corbin Burns with that. You know, like I said, Urias, Christian Yelich, would he partake in that? That would be tremendous.
My gosh.
Yeah, I mean, just think about some of the guys on the team that how they would look. William Contreras, kind of, he doesn't have the long hair in the back, but he's got it shaved in the sides and almost has a kind of a mohawk on top. It's an interesting look, so he probably would be okay with that. But then you feel bad for guys like Rowdy, you know, the follically challenged. Rowdy wouldn't be able to take part. You know, JR, you can relate. I can relate. You know, there are a few guys that wouldn't be able to do it. So, you know, just some of the fun and some of the lightheartedness that a team has to have over the course of a long season. Just very interesting that that kind of stuff is coming from a rookie.
I am not sad that I have to miss the peer pressure of growing my hair out and donning a mullet for the good of the team, because you'd feel like you would have to do it. Christian Yelich in a mullet would be divine. It would be every. I just can't wait. I really, really hope it gets there. These guys have got to start growing their hair out now, though. If they want to actually do this, and they're planning on doing this, they need to. Obviously, Corbin Burns doesn't, but these guys are going to need that. That party in the back doesn't just appear. So really hopeful for that, and very much enjoying the Joey Weimer experience this week and last week, and would love to see him mullets all the way around. The things we did not get to 3 up, 3 down, that Contreras home run on Saturday that tied the game in the eighth, what a tank, 440 feet off the batter's eye in center, wild stuff, off the scoreboard in center, I should say, and really an impressive, oh my gosh, an impressive hit. Also, you mentioned Wade Miley's 5 innings. That was something I was going to mention as well. 5 clean shutout innings in his minor league rehab start today. Does sound like he is on the fast track to returning. Would not be surprised if we are discussing a Wade Miley start in the big leagues this time next week. All right, let's go into Remember When, looking back at some Brewers history. Here it is, Remember When. All right, well, since the Oakland Athletics just shut out the Brewers, I thought I would spin it around and try to find a positive moment when because there have been plenty of bad Milwaukee Brewers teams over the years who have pulled off some surprising stuff. I was going to try to dig into there were a couple options through the years, like the 1977 team that won 67 games and somehow went 8-7 against the Yankees, who that's the team that went on to win the World Series. They won 100 games that year and won the World Series. But I'm going to go back to something I remember pretty clearly, and that's the 2003 team. I was an intern that year with the Milwaukee Brewers back in the day, 20 years ago now, and that was a fun summer because they all of a sudden, this team that was really bad that won 68 games overall got really hot at the end. They won 10 consecutive games. This is a year removed from their 56 win campaign in 2002, when it was the fewest wins in franchise history. So it's a new general manager with Doug Melvin, a new manager with Ned Yost. Everything has kind of been overhauled. And they weren't great. They weren't good. They were a 68-win team. But they were able to kind of piece things together. And they win that 10 in a row. And then at the end of the year, they really do some magic stuff. So actually, it was 10 in a row. And then it was actually 14 of 16, late August and September. But at the end of September, the Houston Astros are in a battle with the Chicago Cubs to win the NL Central. And the Brewers go to Houston and win 2-4 to basically block Houston from the playoffs. The Cubs get in because the Brewers are able to win two of those games. One of them's a blowout, 12-5 win. Richie Sexton had a double and two homers in that game. That was on Friday, September 26th. And then on Saturday, September 27th, here's a name for you, Todd. Wes Obermuller delivers 8 strong innings. He gave up 10 hits, so I don't know if those count as like greatly strong innings, but they were good. He allowed only 2 runs. Dan Kolb gets the save. Scott Pacetic had an amazing night. He had 2 doubles and a triple and 3 RBIs. The Brewers beat the Astros, and the Astros wind up getting eliminated from the playoffs. Again, this was a terrible team, and they were playing in Houston. Houston was amazing, but this is just what happens in baseball. I am not forgiving the losses to Oakland. I'm just pointing out that, you know, these things have happened over time, and that was a bad Brewers team that made some serious noise. Wes Obermuller, in my mind's eye, still very young, sort of this inexperienced guy who never quite really came to fruition. Well, his son is now a pitcher at the University of Iowa, which is where he went to school as well. Wes went to school as well, so that is my I feel old for the I feel old moment of the week. But that was a memorable time. I remember a lot of people being excited about them playing spoiler in 2003. Brewers fans at the time didn't have a lot to cling to. They hadn't had a winning season since 1992. So you could forgive sort of that attitude at the moment, but it does happen. I don't know if it happens to the tune of one of the worst teams statistically in baseball history coming in and sweeping you at your place, but it does happen. So there it is. Remember when our trip back in time. Now let's bring it back to the present and close it down. It is Todd's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone! For Ryan Braun, he just hit a walk-off
home. My Take of the Week. It was an enjoyable homestand. I'm sure not for fans as far as the Brewers' record was concerned, but it was nice seeing different teams at American Family Field, which is obviously a byproduct of the new scheduling system. You know, it's been since, I think, 2017 that the Orioles had been in Milwaukee. And I can't remember exactly when last time Oakland was there, but only a handful of times, really, since the Brewers joined the National League. So it's fun to see these new teams coming in, new faces. And it's going to be an every other year thing now, obviously, with the new scheduling system. So hats off to Major League Baseball. I know a lot of people have a lot of complaints about different things. The first, they sped up the games, which has been tremendous. And now they're bringing in every team to every ballpark every other year. Thumbs up. I could not be happier about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique experience, and it's made for some flat records across baseball, where there's kind of this large middle class, and the Brewers are still in the mix. Like, you know, I don't know if that's still true today, but as of yesterday, even if the season ended, they'd still be one of the playoff teams, even if they didn't win the division or didn't get credit for winning the division. So it's just kind of how it is right now. But yeah, it's cool to see some of these teams. Hey, I've got a little bit of a take. It's a little half-baked, but I know Ken Rosenthal was talking about, or it wasn't Ken Rosenthal, John Heyman was talking about how the Brewers are not expected to move any of their key players at the trade deadline, Corbin Burns among them, because they're still, in his reporting, a little bit burned by what happened last year at the deadline with Josh Hader. I'm starting to think, Todd, I'm starting to think they really should consider it. If they truly can't get long-term deals for guys like Burns, Woodruff, and Adamas, I think they're going to be able to pretty much stay afloat even if they trade those guys, or at least get close to staying afloat, and they could set themselves up for this next wave of guys. I just, this week kind of convinced me that they're not really a team that you should think of as one of those top teams. I really think they should consider it. I mean, I don't know if they will. I don't think they will, but I'm starting to believe that this is a team that could make some serious hay by being sellers at the deadline in a world where I just described nobody is markedly better than anybody else with some rare exceptions. I don't think there are going to be many sellers. I think you could make a lot of headway by moving some key pieces. I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. Are you there yet? Are you thinking about this stuff yet?
Not quite yet. I'll be in Washington on the trade deadline day. It'll be very, very interesting leading into that, you know, what the market looks like, you know, reading some of this early stuff as you have been. You know, there's different guys saying different things. I could see the Brewers going at it from any number of angles. But, you know, the fact that really it's, you know, the Central is up for grabs. It's such a bad division this year. And that whole mantra of just get into the playoffs. We've seen it time and time again, especially the last few years, teams getting in that just barely squeak in and they wind up winning it all or get to the World Series like the Phillies did last year. You know, if the Brewers get these guys back, you know, getting Woodruff back and he's healthy, Corbin Burns starts pitching like Corbin Burns, you know, Willie Adamas starts swinging it. You know, these guys, you know, getting these guys back is obviously like trade deadline acquisitions for them. And then you can look to move them in the offseason. I would argue that, you know, the haul that they got for Josh Hader last year, trading him in season, probably wasn't markedly better than they would have gotten in the offseason. Maybe I'm off base on that.
I agree with you.
You know, from that perspective, I think, again, you know, fans don't like hearing the term. It's going to live in infamy. But the bites of the apple thing, just getting back into the playoffs where anything can happen, I think that's the focus for this organization right now. So would not surprise me to see them hang on to everybody and then try to maybe swing some deals in the offseason.
All right, he is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He obviously can be found at jsonline.com. Find everything he has. He'll be in Minnesota as the Brewers open up a two-game homestand. It's going to be weird. They're off on Monday, then Tuesday, Wednesday, off on Thursday. Tuesday, Wednesday are the games. And then back at home for the Pirates, first of six games on Friday, Pirates and then the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Pirates are right now their top competition in the NL Central, so that's a surprisingly meaningful mid-June matchup at this point. So that is something to keep an eye on. Todd, thank you for joining us this week. We will chat with you again very soon.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Now I move to my interview with Joey Weimer. He is he's the man of the hour for a team that doesn't have a lot of bright spots. He's been one this week, so chatted with him on Sunday. Also after that, a couple minutes with Lucas Ersegg, former Brewers position player, turned relief prospect. He was at AAA Nashville when Oakland traded for him in May, and then he showed up in this series against the A's. He pitched two multi-inning appearances, both scoreless. So it's a great comeback story, and I really enjoyed chatting with him. He's a really interesting guy, and it was just really nice chatting with him. Even though it ended up being bad news for the Brewers, it's still a cool story. So talked with him as well, and thanks for tuning in this week. We'll chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye. My guest is Joey Weimer, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers, having a great rookie season. And we'll talk about baseball, but I want to talk about football because you are from the University of Cincinnati, of course. Luke Fickell was coach at Cincinnati. He's coming to Wisconsin.
People are very excited.
Oh, it hurt. Yeah, but people are excited. So how much did you watch football? I mean, I'm assuming you followed the football program while you were there and know a little bit about Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
What did you have any interactions with him or anything like that in the athletic department?
Yeah. I mean, I've got to meet him. I'm not going to say I know a ton about him. But yeah, that one hurt to lose. You know, knew it was inevitable one day, but
yeah.
Yeah, Wisconsin got a great one. I'm excited to see what he does there, especially being here now. So, yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable.
Are you going to get to go to any Wisconsin games, you think? Or
Probably not, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. If I'll be here, I'll be, you know, back in Cincy, sure. Wherever I'll be.
And you're a Lions fan, right? I mean, you're from Michigan, obviously. Yeah. So, and they had a game that I attended, actually, in January. They beat the Packers, and shut out their playoff hopes. So how do you feel about that team? Because Dan Campbell's got that team in the, turning in the right direction.
No, I'm excited. I think for the first time, I guess in my life, that I'm going to get to see a playoff win this year. So, you know, I love watching football.
Yeah.
You know, always been a Lions fan, so I'm excited for this year.
I know you played football a lot in high school, and I think baseball sounds like was always your primary sport, but how, what, like, what was your football career? What did it look like? How close were you to maybe pursuing that instead?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I love playing football. Love playing basketball. Love playing baseball. It's kind of just, you know, being able to compete. I think I always knew that baseball was the career path for me. Mm-hmm. But no, I really did entertain, you know, wanting to play college football, but yeah, baseball was my best route.
Yeah. Okay, so you get drafted in 2020. That's a weird year, obviously. What changed for you because of the pandemic in terms of preparing, getting yourself in front of scouts? What had to shift?
Yeah. You know, I always credit the Cape for, you know, really being what I feel like gave me my biggest, like, draft boost in terms of getting in front of everybody. And, you know, I was excited to go back and prove myself that junior year, and then everything got shut down. And, you know, I was really fortunate to go to Milwaukee in the fourth that year. And after that, it was kind of weird because, like, I got drafted and then I didn't play baseball for, you know, however long. There was nothing going on. I ended up playing indie ball.
Where was that?
In Utica, Michigan, USPBL. So I was trying to refine my swing there. You know, I had the big leg kick in college. Went to a slow load, a lower leg kick, a not moving, a toe tap. And, you know, even when I got to low A, it was still, like, my swing now was so different than it was there. So yeah. it was a weird time.
Yeah, no kidding. So you've been on, you were on ESPN's Top Plays, I think in Biloxi for a couple things, but also with Cincinnati, you had this slide where you eluded a guy at second base. I think you called it the dolphin move or something like that. I don't remember.
I didn't call it that, but yeah, they're calling it the flop. And
the dolphin flop, yes. Yeah. Do you think you could replicate that if asked to do that again, coming to second base?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hope to not be in that situation because I only had to do that because I was out by about 12 feet. But, always just try to be athletic on the field.
Yeah. And how about the outfield catches? I mean, did you get a chance to watch them when – I think you made two in the same game at Biloxi. Did you and your teammates get to see that when it ended up on ESPN, or did you just hear about that after the fact?
So I don't really go home and watch. You know, I try to keep baseball away from the field.
Sure.
You know, I think that some guys get too caught up in it, overthinking, and, you know, letting days drag into each other. So I did get to see it just from, like, buddies DMing it to me.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, like, sitting watching ESPN waiting for it.
If I had told the minor league Joey Weimer that you would be a major league center fielder, would that come as a surprise to you? I mean, obviously you had the skill set, but you just didn't have as many opportunities in the minors to do that.
Yeah. It obviously would be a surprise just because, like, I've always known I can play center, and I did for a little bit in that Cape year, a little bit in my freshman summer, but, like, I haven't got to play in a while.
Yeah.
Just we've had incredibly talented center fielders coming up in the minors, Sal, G, Joe, like, just I've always kind of just been on right. So.
Yeah. And you get two outfield assists in the same inning on Saturday. I know that's not something you necessarily put on your bingo card, but that is very, very cool.
Yeah.
That had to fire you up.
Yeah, and that is another kind of funny moment, just baseball being a funny game, because I was talking to Owen before the game, swear to God, yesterday, and I was like, dude, I haven't had a throw in, like, a month and a half. Like,
really?
I haven't had an opportunity to throw from center in so long, and then I got two in the second inning of the game, so
yeah,
that was cool.
When is the first time you rocked the mullet? Was that in college or was that previous to college?
No, so that was in high school is kind of where that all started. We would just do, like, stupid haircuts, you know, for baseball season, and kind of just told my buddies about it in college, and they're like, oh, dude, you got to go back to the mullet. So started cutting the mullet, and it kind of just stuck, and, you know, I've been doing it ever since.
Do you believe your teammates that they will get mullets if you guys get to the playoffs?
We'll see. I hope. I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
But time will tell.
Yeah. There was a guy here on Saturday, the day you got the two outfield assists, who looked just like you. He was
wearing I saw that.
You did see it. Okay. He was on the board a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know
cool.
if you did get to see that. He's wearing a Yelich jersey, though. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to get, like, a fielder jersey and tape over
black
it.
Black it out. Yeah. No, that was funny. I looked up and, you know, big smile on my face on the board when I saw that.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That's very cool. Just to go back to your opening day experience, unusual in that you were not on the opening day roster and then very quickly were after there was an injury. So did you – what was the timeline like? Did you go down? Did you – like, who eventually told you were coming back to the big leagues?
Yeah, so I actually got to Nashville.
Okay.
It was supposed to be our opening day. got rained out, so we were just at the field hitting. And, you know, I was going down to the cages, and Sweetie stopped me, and he's like, "Well, where are you going?" And I told him, I was like, "I don't know, I'm going to hit." And he just asked me why, and I was like, "Hey, what are we talking about? What do we mean, why? Why am I going to hit right now?" And he was like, "Well, you don't need to because you're going to Chicago." And I was like, "Oh, okay, that sounds good."
All right, that sounds perfect. And then game two, first swing, you're back in the action. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. What's been the best part of this whole thing? You've obviously had a very good couple weeks here especially, but what's the best part of this whole ride?
You know, obviously the pure emotion of, like, you know, feeling like everything's kind of starting to pay off for, you know, what you worked for your whole life. That was the initial, and now it's just taking every day for what it's worth in terms of, you know, I'm going to show up and play hard. Because, you know, you never know when your last day is on the baseball field. So I'm just kind of trying to take every day not for granted.
All right, sir. Thank you so much. Cool. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Joey Weimer. Now, this is Lucas Irseg. This was a conversation that both Adam McAlvey and I had with him before Friday's game. So it's kind of a more traditional pregame media session, so to speak. So a little different than a normal one-on-one interview, but wanted you to hear this as well. Thanks for listening again, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.
How do you describe this coming in here today?
You know, baseball's full circle for me, especially, you know, being back in Milwaukee and, you know, being with the team that originally drafted me. It's just it's a cool experience to be back here. I don't think I've been back since I signed my contract in 2016 and then got shipped straight out to Helena. So, like I said, for me to be back here is incredible. I've seen a couple of teammates, or old teammates already, but, yeah, man, I'm just excited to get on the field.
It's probably like one of those things you always dreamed about coming here. You probably didn't think you'd be wearing green.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, it's full circle on the other end. It's, you know, the Oakland A's were the team that I kind of rooted for growing up, being from the Bay Area. So, you know, to be back with them and playing in the big leagues and wearing the Oakland A's uniform, it's really special. It's something I'll never forget, and just grateful every day.
What was the order of operations where you get, I guess, traded? Did you know immediately that you'd be coming up to the big leagues as you were getting traded? Like, how did that?
Yeah, you know, so it was, I was in Durham. I think a couple of games went by, still hadn't really pitched, and I was not really wondering, you know, when I was going to pitch, because we had a couple of guys on the 40-man that still needed to pitch out there in Durham. And I think I was, you know, in the shower, and the Triple-A pitching coach, Jeremy, kind of peeped his head around and was like, "Hey, Irseg, we need to talk to you." And my previous two outings hadn't really been that good. Yeah. So internally I thought, oh man, am I going back to Double-A? Like, this is not good. So I kind of took my time taking a shower and took my time getting dressed, kind of delaying the inevitable in my head. And I walked in and, you know, Tom Flanagan was in there. The whole coaching staff was in there. Rick Sweet was sitting at his desk and he's like, "Yeah, Irseg, sit down. Got to talk to you." So immediately I was just like, man, there's no way I'm going back to Double-A. This sucks. But, you know, I'm just going to have to wear it and be a pro. You know, just kind of keep that mental mindset where, you know, I still have a chance to make it, this and that. Rick Sweet starts off by going, "You know, Irseg, I've been doing this for quite a while, and part of it is, you know, being the guy to be the bearer of bad news." And I was like, man, this is really happening right now. Mm. And then he kind of paused and he goes, "But that's not happening. Like, you just got traded to the Oakland A's and you're going to the big leagues." And I kind of just looked around and I saw Ned Yost, our third base coach, kind of like, you know, videotaping me secretly. Oh, and I was like, there's no way, dude. I thought I was going back to Double-A. And, you know, just took me a couple of minutes to kind of really, you know, digest what had just happened. But, you know, we kind of made the official statement to the rest of my teammates. Rick Sweet went out there and kind of, you know, said what he had just told me, and got, you know, everyone congratulated me and was super happy for me. And I mean, till this day, I still can't believe it. I'm waking up every day with the mindset of just really taking advantage of being grateful for, you know, just being here and making sure that, you know, if there is ever a time that, you know, I get sent down or whatever, that I made this first coming, like, to the best of my abilities. So.
You were kind to share your story too, and the things you went through off the field. How do you describe the first time you touched the mound in the big leagues?
Dude, it was incredible. I mean, I felt like I was prepared, and it was in Houston, so it was a pretty packed ballpark there, and just, you know, kind of looking around, I was like, wow, this is awesome. But it really didn't hit me until Altuve came up to bat, because it was his first time, or it was his season debut. I think he had gotten hurt or something like that. But man, when he came up and the crowd started going crazy, I was like, where the F am I? Like, oh my God, that's kind of when, you know, the knees started trembling a little bit. But I realized, I was like, yeah, I got to get back into it. Like, this is what I've been dreaming about. Like, I got to really, you know, focus on being present and just relying on, you know, how I prepared and you know, just focusing on execution and not worrying about anything else. Because at the end of the day, it's the same game that we grew up playing. It's just, you know, on a bigger stage.
Have you been able to go back to talk to the people that helped you with the transition from hitting to pitching? I don't know who all the players are, but I think some of them are here.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And I mean, that changed everything, right?
Like, yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to kind of look back on me as being a position player and thinking, you know, would I have ever gotten here as a position player? But I don't really put all my focus in on that. I just, like I said, I'm here as a pitcher now, and you know, I got here because I know I have the abilities to be a big leaguer. Obviously, it shows, and like I said, that's just not the focus. But yeah, it is. You know, sometimes just talking to some of my old teammates, you're like, oh man, you know, do you think you could still hit this and that? And I was like, yeah, I think so, but there's no need for it. You know what I mean? So.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.